Police, the CPRB is open from 9 to 11 every 9 to 1 every day at
right.
915 Cedar Street
right.
from Monday through Thursday. But once a month they do have their public meeting, which is at 5:30 at City Hall. And are you going to be at that meeting?
I'll try.
I think I'll be working.
You may not be at that meeting.
I got a wage slave job, you know.
I haven't been to one of their meetings in 6 months, but I've agreed probably to go tomorrow because Vinny is going to file his complaint about Sergeant Baker's peculiar, sounds like possibly retaliatory behavior against him.
Right.
For commenting on Baker's checkered past. Yeah, I mean, I'm afraid that's one of the things Baker has to deal with. I get comments about my checkered past.
So it's a CPRB meeting tomorrow?
There is a CPRB meeting at 5:30 at City Hall.
They might be talking about my complaint that just got finally reviewed.
Got my letter from the big chief.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple letters about my complaints. You know, I'm going to encourage people, when you file a complaint, if you do, always ask for an early investigation. And the reason you should ask for an early investigation is... Not that even if you ask for an independent investigation or if you ask for public hearings, and I can explain what those things are, it's just they can delay that until it gets out of IA, until the police department's internal affairs releases the report, and that could be many months. Particularly
yeah.
if there's a court case pending or if Chief Belcher wants to lose the report, as he did in the case of the Button Street shooting of Brian Andrus, but instead. If you demand an early investigation, that puts the CPRB on notice that they have to meet immediately to see if they want to take it out of the police department's hands. Mm-hmm. And that's the only time they can do that. So everybody who files a complaint, I encourage you to ask for an early investigation. Because
yeah, I just wanted to put it out there to people that were in the march that did see Lieutenant Glasses do that, to file a complaint. Or even call the free radio voicemail at 427-4523 so we could file a bunch of complaints against this. It's no way to deal with a march. I mean, if he wanted people on the sidewalk, he could have got a few officers to tell people to do it rather than just him just running his car around, just screaming around these protesters, almost hitting, actually grazed one.
But it's great therapy for Lieutenant Glasses.
I guess. I don't know what the deal is, you know. Who shit in his coffee that morning or something, but I just thought it was ludicrous, especially for a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's dealt with critical mass. He came to critical mass and thought he could preach to everybody like he was everybody's big grandfather or whatever the hell he is, and he's just a cop, you know, and I think that people should stand up, especially against this, because the march was just peaceful, nonviolent. Everybody was very respectable, you know, everybody... had self-respect for everybody in the march and moved out of the way for cars, and it was a great march until he, you know, thought he could take it up a bit further, and a couple people almost got arrested. You know?
Well, I know that after the march, I was very impressed, of course, by the quality of the speakers and the crowd at the town clock, which apparently wasn't even as large as you had marching downtown.
Right.
But, apparently the police blocked off Pacific Avenue. They were afraid the marchers, having walked all the way down Pacific Avenue, and mostly with support, apparent people, if you're to be believed, on Pacific Avenue, the police then ringed, police and hosts kind of ringed the entrance to Pacific Avenue where Front and Pacific meet. This is what I was told. I'm too nearsighted to be able to tell myself.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
They were kind of guarding the shopping area or something from the people at the town clock, even though the people had already walked through that area. You know, they've been peaceful, they've been loud, they've been clear about their message, but they hadn't caused any problems other than in the mind of Lieutenant Velasquez, perhaps.
All right. Well, it was surrounded. There were cops in Bank of AWS parking lot. There were cops over by the Los Pinos restaurant. And they're all waiting, and then there are other cops over by the vets hall area and post office, and they had it surrounded, and they were, like, waiting for another confrontation, I guess. I don't know, but it's just no way to be, especially a police lieutenant. I'd expect it from one of the other younger cops, but not a lieutenant.
Well, I was heartened by the fact that there were a couple of people with signs who went from the rally after it ended and walked up onto Pacific and kind of held them for cars as went by, not talking just about Mumia, which I think is, you know, worth talking about, but about our local situation, about the sleeping
right.
ban, about police harassment on the mall. and they stayed there for several hours with these signs. And I think what their plan is, and they were talking about coming to our show, it looks like they're probably not going to make it, but they were going to hold a, what's called a boycott against bigotry kind of thing, the sort of thing we were doing 4 years ago when the downtown ordinances were first passed, which says to the merchants, look, if you're going to make it illegal for people to sleep, we're going to let the shoppers know that that's what you stand for and encourage them to give their dollars elsewhere. And they're talking about actually doing pickets up and down the mall. And so if that happens, well, you can be sure that I'll be there with my teddy bear and my bathrobe.
There you go. Well, all I want to say, it was a wonderful march. You know, I had a lot of fun. The drums were great. Everybody was just chanting and having a really good kind of celebratory fun time, as well as knowing the issue of Mamiya, and we brought it out and people saw us and people supported us, except for Lieutenant Vlasis. But anyway, that's all I want to say. I got to get back to work.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Goodbye.
And hopefully not everybody is working today. It's a Sunday, but some people are, I guess, two and three jobs, because you don't want to get kicked out of your house and have to deal with the sleeping ban. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on the radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Uncle Robert.
Hey, this sounds like a dead-on David Silva of the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban.
Yeah,
as if I didn't know.
The Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban does not support any boycott at this time.
I see.
I think it's important when you do a boycott to do your research first, and we need to survey those stores.
Interestingly enough, that is exactly what's being done today by
a
woman named Kat, who I interviewed last night
Kat.
At Town Clock. I don't know if you know Kat. She's
sure.
She's sort of a leather and spikes babe, about 19 years old, who told me some horror stories about what the police did 2 and 3 weeks ago regarding needle exchange, which was pretty frightening. They pulled up with a paddy wagon, apparently. This was after our new fine city council was elected and in office, and it looks like they... you know, the police are doing their old tricks with what Sergeant McMahon did a year ago, which is start telling needle exchange they can't give out this fuck-safe, shoot-safe
literature.
They can't give out literature in plain language that tells people how to use needles and how to use condoms and so forth. That's considered a no-no because somehow it's supposed to be encouraging bad behavior instead of helping people to do better behavior. Anyway... let me finish, David. She's doing a survey of the businesses Kat is, who's also a former user herself, and so she's kind of in touch with that population.
She's doing that freelance without a script or without coordinating with anybody else?
She's just agreed to go to him from store to store with the bumper sticker. And she's also going to note down if people are interested in doing it. And frankly, I was very heartened to hear that, although I would have preferred to have a coordinated effort from people in business suits and you know, French accents. But I'm, you know, if you can't get that, you get what you can get.
Get what you can.
Yeah.
You know, let's all send her good vibes that she keeps her cool.
Yeah, she's presenting to each of the merchants.
It's really important to keep it cool when you're talking to these merchants.
She's presenting to them
with fear mostly.
She's presenting to merchants a kind of a bumper sticker like sized statement that says, "Let the migrants, the homeless and migrant workers sleep without fear of tickets or jail."
Yeah. Let the homeless and migrants sleep without fear of tickets or jail.
Or something like that, I believe.
And that bit was basically our slogan most this summer.
Yeah, and I think...
That's a good sign to have.
And if a merchant can't put that in their window, what are they going to say? You know, bust all those damn spics? I mean, is that the watchword? You know, kick the homeless out of town?
I really do, you know, seriously have believed for a long time, you know, that it's really not the residents we have to worry about, although some of the first reports from the early neighborhood meeting, there is the fear of... Fear of feces, you know.
Fear of feces. Yeah.
The scatophobia that can be traced. The scatophobia epidemic can be traced directly to the original carrier Michael Rodkin introducing fear of feces as a political entity in this town. But the businesses, you know, have fear of feces. But it's really the police, you know, that are going to start acting up that we really, you know, need to stay on top of. This whole, now that the camping ordinance has opened up, you know, it's really going to reveal itself to be the police pet ordinance. You know, they want this wide sweeping law that, you know, can be read in any way to correct bad behavior, but they won't tell us what the bad behavior is so that we can pass laws.
What some of the bad behavior is from the last caller, things like demonstrations that Lieutenant Vlasis doesn't like in the streets. You know, that's bad behavior.
Yeah, well, what we're dealing with really is mostly police bad behavior, and I think this is what's probably going to be revealed to the good citizens of Santa Cruz during this opening up period of the camping ordinance. And of course, we expect, first of all, that the first thing to be taken care of is the human rights violations of the sleeping ban portion of the camping ordinance. We do need to make the camping ordinance functional. The permit section does have to allow city staff to act on housing and shelter emergencies and on winter emergencies. The actual permit section, the way permitted camping section reads, really doesn't give much leeway for the mayor to declare any kind of emergency. And of course, the penalty section, it's just really bizarre that for the act of sleeping twice in 48 hours, somebody faces 6 months jail and all the havoc that runs in their lives. And a good understanding of what the variety and what the actual spectrum of the homeless population is taking place now in Santa Cruz. I think most people have friends or know of someone that has been driven out of town or been hassled by this law. So I'm very, very hopeful about the sleeping ban. But now that we open the camping ordinance, we are really going to see that it is the police bad behavior that we have to address as well.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the fear of feces issue will not go away. And because of fear of feces, perhaps we will be getting those public restrooms that are overdue. It's not that we're getting public restrooms to meet a new onslaught of homeless people. It's we're getting public restrooms to serve the community that has not been served for so long because of this fear of feces.
You know, I know last time you called for a shit-in. Are you holding back
actually,
on that?
I was not calling for a shit-in. Mm-hmm. It was someone very, very respectable and responsible in this community that responded to my comments in that way. I didn't call for a shit-in, no. I'm saying that people will do what they have to do. Bodily functions are bodily functions, and if we're not providing the basic sanitation, then, the United Nations demands that we do so. Basic decency demands we do so. The churches of this community are demanding that we do so. So we need to put those emergency toilets in immediately,
mm-hmm.
and then start working on the problem of having public restrooms and public showers.
I agree.
That there addresses the fear of feces issue, which is not something that's going to be sweeping Santa Cruz. It's something that's been going on all along.
Well, it's the constant. It's a very good hot button, a very good tool to smear those who want this human rights issue dealt with, whether it's being used by Mike Rodkin at City Hall in the 1996 when he used it to actually get an injunction against the City Hall sleepers protest, even though it was he who closed down the restrooms. So
it's a hot button issue, Robert, but it turns out that it's really the common ground issue too. It's where the business agree and the residents agree and the houseless all agree. We need bathrooms.
Well, we may have I don't know.
So it's a common ground issue that can be used to our advantage.
It would be nice, but if there's so much agreement, I'm surprised that something hasn't been done in the last 20 years.
Well, this is the first time we've had the camping ordinance opened like this for our review.
Right, but it's certainly not the first time that the issue has risen about poo-poo in public, I mean, so it seems that there's, the failure to do anything like in Santa Barbara, pay merchants to have open restrooms, or in Malibu and Capitola simply to have porta potties if you can't have anything else, or to have monitors as they do in San Diego. This city has been entrenched in its refusal to do any of that, and I know that some of that is because these self-appointed, self-described progressives who have been sort of in a little cliquey inner world for 20 years, because they've been in power for 20 years, now we have some hopes that this new group, even though Byers doesn't seem to feel that covering up with blankets is a human right, she seems to can't deal with that, even though she won't hold special sessions in order to deal with emergency shelter needs, which are so obvious that even her own city authorities, like the CAB, has told her that they don't only recommend eliminating the sleeping ban, they recommend eliminating the entire camping ban. You can't enforce a camping ban. You can't tell people not to sleep, put a tent over your head at night when there is no shelter for them to go to. That's a form of, you're mandating suicide is when you're doing that. Or some kind of, lesser version of that. Byers can't seem to, get that one straight. She can't.
Well, I don't know what the problem was on that, Robert. That was really kind of a strange little coup of the old guard there at just happened in a split second. It was kind of strange that blankets were removed from basic human rights.
It wasn't a coup of the old guard. It was Byers' motion. What are you talking about? She's the one who made the motion.
Let's say none of the newly electeds were prepared for having to deal with that, and they just dropped it. They didn't stick to their guns.
Well, I mean, first of all, Fitzmaurice didn't seem to have any guns. He didn't say a word. You know, so I don't know what guns Fitzmaurice has had or will have. I hope he does develop some balls if he hasn't got any guns. As for Crone and Sugar, Crone is to be, you know, Crone's to be commended for introducing one thing, which is that human rights thing. But considering that he spent,
I think that was essential.
It was good that his human rights initiative, which is that sleeping shall be a human right and a human need. But you know, he spoke with us for several hours, and he committed himself to doing all kinds of things which he never even brought up. So I don't know if we can praise him in any great laudatory tones. I mean, he
yeah,
committed,
I'm not praising the new
he committed himself to doing to bringing up essential shelter issues, which he never mentioned. He committed himself to discussing lowest priority, making camping, you know, making these sleeping violations low. He considered himself to discussing this monitoring commission. None of this stuff we heard a word from him on.
We know
it's ridiculous.
Committed to us, and we don't necessarily know what they committed to other people. We do know that they were under a lot of pressure.
If he tells me he's going to bring, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
if he, I'm sorry.
Robert,
no, no,
I
wait a minute. Let me finish.
Robert,
let me finish. You sound like you are
realistic.
You sound You sound like
these
you
are politicians.
Okay, let me say this, David.
If
a council member tells me that she or he is going to bring something up and doesn't do it, I don't care what he or she has told someone else, she or he lied to me, and that was a false statement. I'm telling Chris Crone that if he is going to commit himself to bring things up, he damn well better bring them up, or just say he's not going to bring them up, because he generates expectations. And I think it's very important that council members keep their word. That's what I'm saying.
Well, let's not forget that he also brought up a measure, point 8 as well. So he did add 2 points to a 6 point.
You're being diplomatic.
That Kathy Byer says would not be that there would be no addition. So there was a small victory there, and I'm saying it,
Paul
Robert. But I'm saying, you know, you do have to acknowledge it was a victory. But the big victory is that the citizens of this community long past have made up their minds that the sleeping ban is a human rights violation. That's long past overdue, and the politicians have a lot of catching up to do. And we now also got to make this camping ordinance work, for human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of work to do. If anybody's interested in activating, getting people mobilized for these public hearings, you can call the Committee of Appeal of Sleeping Ban at 457-9754, extension 182. We need volunteers very badly. We've got about 3,800 signatures that we've got to get phone numbers for and get those people at the public hearings. We've got a lot of businesses to survey. I'm sure Kat's doing a fine job, but she will probably find out in about a block and a half that it's a lot more than a day's work.
It is a lot more.
It's a lot of work.
However, I'm wondering, is that phone number you're giving out really the number you want to give out?
Yes, it is. Just confirmed that it is, again, the reinactivated Committee to Appeal Sleeping Ban phone number, valid. Do you leave your name and address and how we can get a hold of you?
Give that number again, David.
457-9754, extension 182.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Robert. Keep up the good work. I don't know what to tell you except, you know, if anybody's planning a boycott or a picketing and so forth, let's do it together. Let's have our research done. Let's know which stores are being hateful and which stores are in doubt and which stores are being loving. We need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'm still waiting to see those signs appear in any stores that say support, let the homeless and migrants sleep at night without fear of tickets or jail. Maybe that means that we got lots of loving stores, but somehow their love just isn't making it to the surface. And I guess maybe the way to get it to the surface is to bring out the pickets, perhaps? Who knows?
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Lucy.
Hey, Lucy.
I wanted to sort of continue with some of the conversation we were having yesterday on that show run by that patent attorney who lives and works in Palo Alto.
And for some reason
has a show in Santa Cruz.
Lucy, you're talking about KSCO and the fine talk show host Robin, it could be Goldstein, I'm not sure. But have you been listening to Free Radio, or have you just calling in directly?
I have been listening off and on today. I've had to run away from the radio, and I did hear David's
Oh, good, okay.
So he touched on some of the things that I'm interested in, too.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm. I am real interested in this fear of feces issue because my grandmother was a pioneer in public health, so I'm concerned about these things.
Okay.
And from my perspective, you can't look at public health from just in one isolated spot here and an isolated spot here. You have to look at the whole community And when you look at a city like Santa Cruz, you know the numbers, I don't. What's the numbers on homeless in Santa Cruz? Remind me.
In the city of Santa Cruz, I would say 500 to 1,500, okay. If not more.
And the whole population of the town is, you know, like, what, 60,000?
52,000.
52,000, it's still down there. So, we're talking about a whole community, and we're saying that 500 of them, which is a big number of people taken one by one, are living on the streets. And if we want to keep disease from just sweeping through the whole city,
mm-hmm.
we have to consider the conditions that every single person in the city is living under.
Right.
Which means that public sanitation is not an issue of, oh, well, if you put it there, it encourages people to live on the street who would otherwise be forced to seek a house and a job.
Mm-hmm.
As if that was the way it worked anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You have to consider that you put a public toilet there, it's good for every single person in the city.
Right.
You don't withhold sanitation from some people because you think they're not deserving of it. You make public sanitation available to every single person.
Not to mention the tourists.
It's a very chilling thing for families of people who come, you know, from 40, 50 miles, 100 miles away, to think that they're going to have to be searching for a bathroom all day if they take their children anywhere.
It should also be pointed out that the Soquel bathroom, at least the male side, I think, is now closed. That's what I was told yesterday. That's not a 24-hour bathroom, but that's a bathroom that's a public bathroom downtown, the only really public bathroom downtown. And it is now closed for construction.
I had thought that the whole thing was closed because it's fenced all around.
I didn't know for sure. I was told the men's is closed.
I've become very clever at figuring out who doesn't really care. You go to the public library, but that's kind of out of your way if you're somewhere else.
And there's City Hall if it's open during the day.
Yeah.
Unless Michael Rutkin has got his key out. No, just kidding.
In a way, this is only like a sliver of the whole issue, but if you look at the whole issue of what should be done about the fact that people live on the street,
mm-hmm.
in the same light, you come up with the same answer over and over again, which is that draconian measures are not just inconvenient or humiliating or life-threatening for the people who they are taken against, they are also bad for the physical health, morale, and morals of the community at large.
Not to mention the conscience.
Yeah, well, there you go, morale and morals.
Indeed.
And the only, taken from a Machiavellian standpoint, what is good for our community is what is good for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
If you treat the homeless with the same kind of dignity and concern that you treat the housed, yes,
mm-hmm.
then
or the homely in my case.
Well, mine too. Mm-hmm. I'm a homely type.
Mm-hmm. A homebody. Yeah.
What that does is it serves the whole community well. There's no advantage to be gotten out of taking people's blankets away from them and making legal sanctions against their mere existence on the street at night.
Mm-hmm.
The only advantage is that it gives, actually, the police more work to do, and therefore you need more police.
Well, which can be a plus for the Police Officers Association.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. I believe that just like in the case of prison wardens and animal control officers, that this is an unspoken piece of the agenda. I don't believe that the police are necessarily even consciously aware that they care about it in this way. But
uh-huh.
I believe that's one of the big
things. It's the Lebensraum, so to speak, without even being aware of the, as
yes.
you stretch yourself out there. Yeah, well, we talked about this yesterday on KSCO when we had this rare opportunity to talk to a broader audience by AM radio.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the argument will be by the those who are opposed to this that if you provide more facilities, they will come. That's going to be the claim, as Mike Rodkin used to claim. He I think he gave it the 3 to 10 million figure, which is probably an exaggeration. But there are
those 3 to 10 million homeless in California.
No, he said 3 to 10 million will come to town if you remove the sleeping. If you allow people to restore their right to sleep at night, then you're going to get all these
homeless
tramps, bums.
Where people are passing notes about where you get beat up less and get your stuff taken.
Right,
away
it's the hobo grapevine, the Rainbow Village.
Oh, we'll get a little smiling cat by the side of the freeway.
Yeah,
like they used to put by a kind-hearted woman's store.
Yeah, the mystic signs it'll get out to the community that Santa Cruz is an open community. In fact, well, I mean, the merchants used to believe this years ago. They actually came to the street musicians in the late 70s and asked how they could send a harsh message to the rainbow community that not the homeless, but the rainbow tie-dye counterculture freaks and hippies were just, this was not a good place for them to come.
And oh, that's funny.
So the question is, you know, what, and this is going to be raised by, I would assume, if they're continuing their same arguments, by people like Rotkin and Rittenhouse, if he's still around, and, you know, Mahaney and Cynthia Matthews and Michael Hernandez, and they're going to say, well, what about, you know, if you put in all these bathrooms and all these, and you make it legal for people to sleep in their vehicles, then why won't 50,000 vehicles come to town?
Well, first off, I actually don't think that it makes sense to exaggerate the mobility of people who have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people do sort of bomb around the country looking for a place that they can manage to live at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think those numbers are going to increase much under any circumstances,
mm-hmm.
unless there were, like, suddenly a bunch of jobs and a bunch of cheap housing and a...
I think it
takes a lot more than a street where
we could declare that we struck gold. Maybe that would cause an influx.
That might cause an influx.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your figures are borne out by Santa Barbara and Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Florida's experience, where the sleeping ban was repealed for 2 years, 5 years, and 5 years, respectively, and still is repealed in those two Florida areas, and you have, according to social service providers I've talked to, no increase. You know, that this is essentially the same people, the same pretty stable levels. And
are you saying that Santa Barbara reinstated its sleeping ban?
Oh, yeah. They reinstated their sleeping ban in 1989, but not as Rotkin claims because they found that people were sleeping all over and causing problems, but rather because a judge simply ruled ex cathedra from his high chapel, so to speak, that sleeping was camping, and there was still a camping ban in effect, but there was no sleeping ban. So he said, well, even though there's no sleeping ban, sleeping really is camping, and therefore you're illegal under the camping ordinance, and therefore it's all illegal.
Have they been aggressively enforcing this, or have they been letting it
happen? Yeah, oh no, it is still enforced, and it's enforced sufficiently aggressively that a group of homeless people and young people came to city council about a month ago and very eloquently pleaded to lift the laws on sleeping. And I actually played some of their plea here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And unfortunately, they were, of course, dumped 5-2. But it was interesting that two members of the council said, no, we should talk about this. This is a real concern. And, you know, it's obviously, you know, a basic civil liberties issue, no matter where you are. But the point is that in Santa Barbara, there was no influx of people during the period when it was lifted. And there has been no influx, according to what I've heard, in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. And of course, what I need to do is get the statistics out in a very authoritative way for it, so the city council minority, although theoretically our majority should be able to just pass what it wants anyway, but for the community to hear what the realities are about this issue, that, you know, this is a myth. This is a mythology it's a mythology of fear, and it's a mythology.
It's definitely a mythology of fear, and it's not based in any understanding of how vast migrations start. Vast migrations start when people get much more desperate where they are, and there is really good reason to think that things are much better somewhere else. And I'm sorry, but even if we were to completely repeal the camping ban and put in all the public toilets and showers and washing facilities that we need for the population, for a larger population than we expect, it still wouldn't take away the fact that living on the street,
even
in Santa Cruz, where it's pretty
and warm some of the year,
And it doesn't actually freeze here. I'm actually kind of surprised that the proportion isn't higher, because there are so many places where you take your life in your hands just to stay there past November 1st.
And yeah, it's...
I'm surprised that there aren't more people here.
It's surprising, but I think you're right. I think if you look back, I'm not really familiar with the causes of the Great Migration of the 30s to California, but, you know, the mythology is, and maybe it's just mythology, but maybe it's true, that you see films like Grapes of Wrath, it was because they promised all kinds of cheap jobs out here.
There was a lot of advertising.
A lot of advertising. They actually lured people to the area, and, of course, people were being devastated in certain areas. And it is true that the Homeless Community Resource Center has noted an influx of people from Berkeley and San Francisco because of massive crackdowns in those two towns. So what you're suggesting, when conditions get very desperate elsewhere and people are driven out, they do show up somewhere else. And it's also true, for example, that Modesto lured families from San Jose. You know, I did a show on this recently with the promise of cheap housing. But I don't think that public bathrooms and laundromats and the right to sleep at night without being arrested are going to, you know,
well, and then
get people here,
also
particularly.
The examples of people coming from San Francisco and elsewhere highlight the other part of what I've always considered to be the major solution to social problems, is that if you insist that other places have a modicum of decent treatment for people at the same time that you provide it, there is no longer any inspiration for people to leave. Everybody is, everywhere you go, there's a toilet, there's a bathroom, there's some kind of reasonable arrangement about sleeping.
Yeah.
Now, this would also have a residual effect for tourism, too, because it means that poorer families can drive through here, sleep in a rest stop, and spend some money on some touristy things for their kids.
Yeah, but they're just white trash. Who wouldn't want their kind?
Well, I resemble that remark.
Yes, indeed. Let me interrupt you, Lucy, because we are coming up at the end of the show. We have actually 6 minutes left, and I have to make a number of announcements.
Okay.
So let me thank you for calling in and encourage you to join one of our working groups at 423 Huff.
423 Huff.
Yes, we're trying to, or you can also call the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban at 457-9754, extension 182.
457-9754. 9754.
Extension 182.
Extension 182.
And if anybody's getting lost in these numbers, just call 423 Huff after the show and I'll give you all the details.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye bye.
And I hear the clucking of the little red hen in the background as she pecks away at me. But we do have a few more minutes left, so if you have anything you want to say on the air, give us a call. We've often been criticized, or not often, occasionally been criticized for not covering current events like the Clinton impeachment, which is going to be a kind of a Republican freak show, which is rolling down the way. I'd like to see Clinton impeached for all kinds of other reasons, but this particular Republican move sucks to the max. Let's hear a song from 10 years ago about a similar sexual peccadillo scene.
One, two. Who's that running down the alley in the dead of Friday night as he zippers up his trousers in the inky slinky light? Why, of course, it's good old Gary leaping over someone's fence. Yes, it's Gary, Gary Hart. I wouldn't leave you in suspense. He likes going out to parties, he likes being in Rolling Stone, and he ran things from McGovern, so I guess we should have known. He likes warm and willing women, he likes being where they are. He couldn't sing, he couldn't dance, but he just had to be a star. So he went into the politics game. Oh, he went into the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, looky, you can get a lot of nookie if you get into the politics game. Let's sing it again. Oh, he went into the politics game. Oh, he went into the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, looky, you can get got a lot on the team to get into the politics game. When he landed in the Senate, Gary started making hay. Gary started making nearly everything that came his way. He liked taking opposition, but when all was said and done, Gary's favorite position was the missionary one. Kennedy was Gary's hero, and he studied him with care. How he stood and how he walked, and even how he wore his hair. But the thing that thrilled him most and made him swear he wouldn't fail, if he made it to the White House, think of all the chicks he'd nail. So he went into the politics game. Well, he went into the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, look, you can get on a look if you get into the politics game. He met her at a party, and her name was Donna Rice. She was Gary's kind of woman, she was pure Miami Vice. She thought he was Gary Collins and could get her on TV. She suggested monkey business, and the rest is history. They caught him making whoopee, and the campaign had to cease. He came back and tried again, but now he's gone to find some beef. He's gone back to Colorado for a little while, and then just as soon as he gets horny, he'll be coming back again. He'll be running in the politics game. He'll be running in the politics game. Warren Beatty told him, lucky you can get a lot of if you get into the politics game.
And that was Tom Paxton, that's his name, from the album Politics. We are out of here in 2 minutes. Let me quickly kind of give you a preview of what's coming up on Thursday and shows to come, not sure in what order. We're going to be going through the Pottinger decision of Miami, which actually has decriminalized sleeping for the last 5 years and was finalized in October of this year. We're going to be looking at that. We're going to be reviewing the campground, the mythology behind the campground, hoping to get old Charlie Phillips to release his video so we can get the soundtrack of that video to show you the real culprits behind the closing of the campground. We're going to be going, of course, into what happens with the subpoenaed phone records of yours truly and Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we encourage you to stay on board with that. We hope to get Dar Trusk, seeking volunteer, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, the woman who called in earlier, I guess Grace her name was, to call back with the stories about what's happening around the issues of, she's had some really horrendous stories about rent, and hopefully we can get her on. We're going to be giving you lots of stuff. Hey, I haven't even got time to tell you what we're up to. In fact, all I've got time to do is go out on this last song, from Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall, and to wish the Little Red Hen luck with the next hour or two or three. Come back on Thursday at 6. Join us on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Support Vinny at the Police Review Board tomorrow at 5:30 at City Hall. And give a call to 423-HUFF if you want to know how you can help.
Build high, build wide your prison wall. Let there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide that all the land be locked inside. You have seized the valiant few whose glory cast a shade on you. How can on song, the sunlit stream. aching breeze. Then you can throw away your keys. Build high, build wide your prison wall, that there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide, that all the land be locked inside.
Mm-hmm.